I'm here with Esteban Esquivel Santovania. He is a PhD and an associate professor. He's a research assistant as well at the Autonomous University of Ciudad Juarez, Juarez, Mexico. We've done some projects together, and he's going to talk today about domestic violence in Latin America. Welcome to the podcast, Esteban.
Glad to be with you, John.
Yeah, it's
morning.
good to hear from you, as always. So I've got some questions for you about domestic violence in Latin America, and there are some clear differences, and then there are a lot of similarities with domestic violence in the United States. So I think our listeners will be very interested in hearing about this. So let me start off with a few questions, and we'll see how things go. So let's start with the first question is, what is the prevalence of intimate partner violence or domestic violence in Latin America, Mexico and other countries south of the United States?
Right. So so first of all, we have to realize that when it comes to partner abuse, prevalence rates, they tend to vary widely, and this will depend on the kind of study one is looking at, one is analyzing, say its methodology, the type of sample, the time frame reported, and so on. Generally, we can say that when it comes to lifetime victimization rates, you will typically have studies reporting from 10 to 50%. So there's it's a wide, a very wide interval for female victimization, whereas male victimization is normally reported from 23 to 48%. Now, when one looks at this national violence against women surveys, you will have prevalence rates in between 10 and 30%. These are non-clinical samples. And then when you look at a psychological partner abuse, that is verbal aggression and different forms of controlling behaviors, you will have a more widespread abuse there, with rates extending from as little as 4 to up to 80% for male perpetration, 4 to 67% for previous year female perpetration. So that's generally the snapshot when it comes to like this big, large national surveys.
So when you mention psychological abuse, so we're clear about what we're referring to for our listeners today. We're talking about, verbal abuse, put downs, attempts to threaten the partner, jealous and controlling behaviors, economic abuse, all those types of non-physical types of abuse, correct?
Exactly. They may include different sort of controlling tactics, coercive behavior, intimidation, threats, emotional, financial control over the intimate partner, all those kinds of behaviors.
Yeah. So what you just talked about were just general rates across all Latin America, and you gave us sort of a general overview of how widely divergent the rates are from country to country. Are there particular countries in Latin America where the prevalence rates seem to be really high, higher than others?
Well, so yeah, in some South American countries, such as Brazil, for instance, you will have the highest rates there. So, for instance, with Mexico, right, you will have a standard rate of, let's say, 25 to 30% for previous year female victimization, right? So Most of it, the higher rates come from Central and South American countries, such as Brazil, Colombia as well. That's where you will find that the highest prevalence rates within this interval.
Right, and these are rates again measured with a general population sample, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah,
Yeah.
right. So, okay, and we're talking here again about physical rates of intimate partner violence.
Exactly.
Okay, so you often hear in the United States that amongst victims' advocates that even when they acknowledge that maybe rates of partner violence are relatively equal across gender with Americans, they'll often point out that it's different in Latin America, that's much more patriarchal, that gender rates should be much less even. In other words, men who are supposed to be, were given social permission to be the heads of the household and are given more social permission, let's say, to dominate their female partners, the rates of violence are assumed to be much higher against women than against men. Are there countries where the rates are really not very equal between men and women, where the rates are much higher for female victimization and male perpetration?
So these countries like countries like Venezuela, countries like Brazil, so they do have you do have higher female victimization rates, which is normally what is assessed rather than perpetration rates. So you will have so you will have, for instance, when it comes to lifetime physical partner abuse, you will have around 40%, female victimization, 40% prevalence there, compared to say 18%, 18% or 15% male victimization, right? But those studies in those countries tend to be very scarce. So the most surveys, most national surveys, focus on violence against women within the household context. So they are rather rare to find.
One of the stereotypes is that Latino men are macho, that they always want to dominate. But what you're saying is that the prevalence rates are pretty high for female perpetration as well. Maybe not exactly the same in some countries, but it sounds like what you're saying is there's a lot of violence by both males and females in Latin America. Have you done some research, or is there any research available on the context of domestic violence in Latin America? In other words, it's possible that the women who are, hitting their partners in Latin America are fighting back, that they're engaging in self-defense. So it's also possible that they're initiating the violence. We don't really know until we ask, right? So what do you know about that? The context, who initiates, what are the rates of self-defense by men and women as a motive for perpetrating IPV in Latin America?
Okay, so most studies looking at partner abuse in Latin America tend to focus on female victimization. So in general, partner abuse is widely understood as a gender issue. Hence, you have most of these national surveys address only female victimization. It's very rare to find studies looking at male victimization or female perpetration. These small studies you will find in the literature generally address prevalence rates. They don't do they have we haven't There's not much research here, say, on motivations from the female perpetrator. So most of this research focuses on either male perpetrators or female victims within the context of power and control dynamics, because
okay.
that's the general view.
Yeah, okay, I get that. Yeah, right. That's what when you and I did that literature review a few years ago, I recall that we were trying to find research that spoke to the context of IPV, but I recall that we didn't find much. So it doesn't sound like you found a whole lot since then. Probably a lot more research needs to be conducted in terms of what motivates men and women in Latin America to abuse one another. So let's talk about risk factors. What do you know about what are the factors that are associated with intimate partner violence perpetration in Latin America? You know, in the United States, some of the major risk factors, and also in Europe, would be factors such as low income, unemployment, having witnessed or experienced abuse as a child, having an aggressive, domineering personality, and so forth. So I'm just wondering what you know about the risk factors for perpetration in Latin America. Are they similar to the risk factors in the United States, or are they different?
So, well, according to a lead review we conducted, we found some of the of these commonly reported risk factors are very similar to the ones reported internationally, particularly those that have to do with sociodemographics. So, for instance, you will find in the literature in Latin America issues of like substance abuse, jealousy towards an intimate partner, a perpetrator's young age, low educational attainment, unemployment, the need to control an intimate partner as the most frequently reported perpetration risk factors. There are similarities there in terms of victimization risk factors. You will typically read in the literature about women's lower level of education, low income, tolerance for abuse, previous experiences of violence in the family of origin, including child maltreatment, interparental violence. Right. So that this is what you would normally find in the literature here.
So it sounds like the risk factors are very similar between the United States and Latin America. What about the risk factor of gendered attitudes? So in the United States, there are a lot of policymakers who do view domestic violence as a gendered issue, and will say that male patriarchal beliefs about how men and women should act in society, the roles for women in the home and so forth, that those are really, they propose that those roles really are very important driving forces behind domestic violence by men. But the research in the United States suggests that these are only weak risk factors. I would imagine that maybe in Latin America they're more important, perhaps. Is there any research that's looked at, specifically, gendered beliefs, patriarchal beliefs about women should be in the home, cooking, things like that? Are those related at all to perpetration rates in Latin America? I mean, you mentioned that pro-violent attitudes are relevant, and they are, of course, in the United States as well. But what about actual patriarchal beliefs per se?
Right. So attitudes, pro-violent attitudes, patriarchal beliefs here. At the level of national surveys, it's considered to be a main determinant, a main risk factor.
Okay.
It changes when it comes to studies with university students, for instance, where you will have a different picture there. So you would normally have here, for instance, studies reporting more emancipated nowadays, more emancipated beliefs, coexisting with more traditional beliefs in students, university students samples. Hence patriarchal beliefs tend to coexist in these type of samples. They are a risk factor, not a very important risk factor, but when it comes to national surveys, it's more more than a proved risk factor. It's given, it's believed, it's assumed because of the nature of our society, a collectivist society with patriarchal links. It is perceived attitudes, patriarchal beliefs and attitudes supportive of violence are perceived to be a main risk factor, contributor, partner of use.
Right. Well, do you agree with that? You're saying that these are assumed to be. Do you feel that the research supports that point of view, or do you disagree with that?
I would not say research in Latin America. Researchers and practitioners tend to have that view, but it has been rarely empirically tested, right? So there's actually a need to conduct research linking behaviors and the attitude component to define really the weight of patriarchal beliefs in light of the social changes that we as a society have been experiencing recently.
Let's talk about government policies. What are the governments, the various governments in Latin America, trying to do to address the problem of domestic violence? Are there countries that are taking it, you know, seriously, funding, you know, let's say funding shelters or funding programs that would either preventative programs or treatment programs? What's going on in terms of public policy in Latin America?
Mm-hmm. Right. So. I think I mentioned earlier that most of these initiatives stem from a government policy, a government agenda to reduce gender inequality. As such, when it comes to interventions, programs for victims, you will normally have programs that try that focus on empowering women to leave abusive relationships in, rather than have this a restorative justice approach. So that's the main focus on those programs or the government policy behind those programs. And when it comes to perpetrator programs, this is a new area, an emerging area of interest for governments. There are countries in South America, for instance, in Colombia, where the understanding of IPV, right? The understanding of IPV really drives all resources, all funding for victims, as they are the primary targets and the ones who need the attention. So there are countries in Latin America where there is no government policy for perpetrator programs. Wherever there are these programs, they seem to be conditioned, right? They seem to be conditioned by special commissions regulated by national women institutes. Lacking any controls in terms of effectiveness, right?
You're saying that there's not a lot of that these programs aren't driven by researchers or psychologists, but rather organizations that are primarily interested in the rights of women rather than domestic violence per se. It sounds like where we were in the United States about 40 years ago, when in the United States shelters were established. Our collective focus was on protecting victims. It was only later that in the United States, we began to also focus on trying to help perpetrators. Are there any particular countries that you feel are more advanced in terms of a more comprehensive approach to domestic violence treatment? In other words, they're also either funding or at least trying to help perpetrator programs or encouraging them in any way. Are any countries more ahead of the curve, so to speak?
Yeah, well, we found so we conducted a continental survey where we invited service providers from South America, Central America, and from Mexico. And so we found in countries such as Brazil, Argentina, Mexico, there are government-funded and non-government-funded perpetrator programs. They are very few programs. They seem one of the challenges we found is that all the funding for these programs tend to lack any government policy in terms of program effectiveness. So that's what we found. These are some of the findings we noticed here. Yes, there are countries like the ones I mentioned, but there are other countries that are really in the first stages, let's say. Even within, for example, in Mexico, even though there is a law at the national level recognizing the need to have perpetrator programs. This law appeared first in 2007. From there on, several states designed their perpetrator programs, but few states actually, 8, 9 states out of 32 actually implement this program. So,
okay. So again, it sounds like where we were in the United States several decades ago.
Yes.
Well, so the programs that do exist, Esteban, that you're aware of, what type of philosophy do they seem to have? What are some of their methods, their approaches to helping, clients, lessen their violence? And are any programs working with female perpetrators, or are they pretty much only working with male perpetrators at this point?
Right. So. Most perpetrator programs focus on male perpetrators, right?
Right.
Very, very rarely you see female perpetrators there. They are mostly thought and directed to male perpetrators. Most of these programs have incorporated different theoretical approaches, so you would normally see these programs incorporating elements of cognitive behavioral therapy, social learning, narrative therapy, family systems, all of them, say, nested within a gender perspective, hence the focus on male perpetrators.
It sounds like what you're saying is that they have a gender perspective and are focusing on men and men's attitudes towards women, but at the same time, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're saying that they're also using cognitive behavioral therapy approaches and
yes.
Narrative therapy. So it's not a strict Duluth approach. It's a little bit more diverse, it sounds like.
Yes, it's more of a hybrid approach, I would say.
Yeah.
So you would normally have these programs teach, say, what practitioners call here emerging masculinities, which is another word to say non-traditional masculinity, to create gender role awareness. But they also work on developing different set of skills, communication skills, conflict resolution skills, identifying power and control tactics, healing post-trauma, all these aspects, that say complement. So that's the understanding. There's all of these set of skills that emotional management, right? All of these variables that play a role in partner abuse perpetration, but the main, the key factor, the key variables there are still modifying attitudes, pro-violent attitudes, patriarchal attitudes, you know, against women. So that's what most perpetrator programs focus on here.
Right, right. Our colleague Chris Doria Wellen, I've read several of her articles, and she wrote a book about working with Latino men. Her approach does seem to combine all those things. It includes changing gendered patriarchal attitudes, but it also tries to help men to manage their emotions and also to acquire communication skills. And it also looks at the whole family system. And do you want to talk a little bit about Chris Doria's work? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you've done some trainings with her, right?
Well, we've done some research work with her. So her model, let's say, her program, yes, looks at all of these variables you mentioned, changing pro-violent attitudes, but it also works at the level of managing emotions, right? Anger management, all of these skills, developing all of these skills. It has a stronger emphasis on this psychological attention that the perpetrator should receive compared to these other government-funded programs that we have in Latin America. It does incorporate a lot more Cristoria's program. It does incorporate a lot more the psychological attention module there. So there is a lot of work done in respect with emotional regulation, for instance, yeah. A lot more than in the other programs.
Let me ask you, Esteban, to what extent is alcohol or drug abuse a risk factor for domestic violence perpetration in Latin America? It certainly is in the United States, especially with more consequential violence that leads to serious injuries. So do you want to talk a little bit about, you know, rates of alcohol abuse and its relationship to intimate partner violence in Latin America?
Right. So yeah, substance abuse is actually one of the major risk factors, the most commonly reported risk factors here for perpetration. And it's linked to physical injuries, which are normally at higher rates for women here. So substance abuse is normally linked here with physical injuries, also with complications in pregnancy, during pregnancies, you know, for women.
What do you mean by that, Esteban? Complications in pregnancy?
Right. So perpetrators have been studied in substance abuse with perpetrators have been found to be a major risk factor behind their physical violence they exert over their intimate partner, altering pregnancies in the form of abortions. Right. So most of the research here in terms of consequences of partner abuse have to do with substance abuse, alcohol abuse in terms of physical injuries for women and yeah. Complications during pregnancies.
Right. Are men more likely to then assault their pregnant partners if they've been drinking? Is that something you're suggesting? Because in the United States, it's assumed that rates of domestic violence are against women are highest when they're pregnant. But the literature is a little mixed on that. I'm just wondering, in Latin America, is there, you know, A, is there more violence against women when they're pregnant? And B, does it involve alcohol abuse?
Yes, pregnancy is seen as this period of pregnancy is seen as a risk factor itself, because it is believed that men with patriarchal beliefs here tend to take advantage of this period where women are, you know, vulnerable, where they depend more on their male partner. So there tends to be this general belief that male perpetrators take advantage of this period, and that's when more partner abuse occurs. Additionally, to the substance abuse contribution to partner abuse.
What are your own thoughts, Esteban, about treatment? So, you've talked a little bit about the limitations of government policies, the lack of resources, and so forth. What do you think? What would you recommend that be done to improve the delivery of services to both victims and perpetrators of domestic violence in Latin America? If you can, you know, wave a magic wand and you know, improve the response to domestic violence in Latin America. What do you think are some of the key changes that you'd like to see made?
Actually, when we conducted a multi-country survey here, asking agencies that provide these programs on what they thought that their programs needed in order to improve their effectiveness, they mentioned several areas of improvement. So, for instance, many of these agencies mentioned they felt they needed to conduct more structured. As a more standard procedure, the identification, the appropriate identification of partner abuse going on there. Normally, here, all perpetrators are treated, say, equally in terms of the nature or motives behind the partner their partner abuse. So that's something many of these agencies are suggesting that. The appropriate identification of specific types of perpetrators is something is one of the challenges. Another area of improvement that they suggested is that these programs should be adapted for minority groups such as members from the LGBTQ community. Programs adapted for indigenous groups we have in different Latin American countries. Most of these programs only are delivered in Spanish, so they leave out essentially all of these groups that are non-Hispanic speakers. There are other areas of improvement as well. That they mentioned they have to do with incorporating elements into their program for those people with special needs, for people you know with visually disabled and so on. And generally, agencies here express a need that all these programs should incorporate comprehensive risk assessments from multiple sources, that is. And one of the main challenges here for these agencies delivering these programs is actually documenting how effective or not they are, as most of them deliver the programs, but most of them do not have really. And some sort of record in terms of recidivism rates and so on.
I wonder how much cooperation there exists amongst all the stakeholders, all the, you know, in these communities. In other words, I wonder how much cooperation these programs are getting from the police department or the district attorney or social service agencies? Is that an issue in some of these countries?
So most of these programs receive, let's say, their clients, the perpetrators, they are referred by the Justice Department. There is a need to link the work with social service agencies, with academics doing research in this area. It seems here as if practitioners and researchers, for instance, they're conducting work very separately, so their fields are very isolated. There doesn't seem to be a lot of interaction here in terms of these government agencies, non-government agencies, social work, and academics.
But what about cooperation, at least between battery intervention programs and law enforcement? One of the issues in the United States with victims advocates and also treatment providers like myself is that, for example, a client is referred by the courts, they have a restraining order, but it's not enforced. Or they're supposed to enter a drug treatment program and they don't do it. And then there's not enough probation officers to supervise. So the client just doesn't complete a program and no one holds them accountable. So do you have those kinds of gaps in the system, so to speak? And I bring this up because one of the major findings that we've, in terms of the effectiveness of these battery intervention programs is how well are they connected in a coordinated community response? There seems to be evidence that when there's a coordinated community response that perpetrators are more likely to be held accountable. That's when everybody's working together. So you're saying that researchers and providers aren't connecting very much, but what about law enforcement? What about the connection between these perpetrator programs and the local shelter, for example? Are there areas where there is a lot of cooperation?
Well, we do have that problem as well. There are some areas, even within countries, there are areas where you will have more cooperation, more collaborative work between law enforcement and these service providers. But then again, there are other states, right, where you will have them working very separately. So we do have that problem. Here in Juarez, for instance, we are trying to put together a project so we can work closely with law enforcement. And nowadays here, you will have domestic violence perpetrators held accountable at the local level, let's say, but nationwide, it seems to be a problem because not all states, not all cities have this sort of agreement. There's between law enforcement and service providers and so on.
It sounds like some good things are happening, although it also sounds like there's a great number of things that need to be done in Latin America. What are you working on now, Esteban? What kind of research are you either working on now or maybe thinking about working on or hoping to do in the future?
So now, for instance, nowadays I am working with a civil association, and we are conducting a project here with domestic violence perpetrators. So these are male perpetrators, people that are accused of domestic violence, but the incidents are not so severe so that they are considered to be some sort of minor offense, right? So I'm working with those people and trying to collect data from male perpetrators in terms of not only their relationship or violent relationship dynamics, but also on their beliefs, gender role beliefs, substance, alcohol abuse, family of origins violence, all of that. I'm trying to we're trying to collect data so we can design here locally a program in order to give these services to perpetrators. As such, Juarez does not have, even though we have a state law and a program for male perpetrators at the state level, locally there's no perpetrator programs actually being conducted or delivered. So that's what we are working now. So this is one of the projects I'm working now.
It sounds like you will be able to bring to the table some really good ideas, given your research experience. It was great talking with you, Esteban. Let's keep in touch. This will conclude our interview for today.
Okay, glad to be with you.
All right.